Immersive cultural enrichment on board and on shore. Freshly prepared regional cuisine. Viking sails the rivers of the world and takes travelers to the heart of iconic destinations. Discover more at viking.com.
Learn how to plan, invest, and live smarter with the Raymond James For What It's Worth podcast. Featuring insights from leading professionals, you'll get the latest in wealth management, market commentary, and engaging research. Listen today at raymondjames.com/podcast.
I'm Jace Lacob, and you're listening to Masterpiece Studio. The history of World War II has been told on our screens again and again and again. Indeed, you've seen some of those wartime stories of triumph and tragedy on Masterpiece in recent years, and will likely continue to see them for years to come. But I'd wager you haven't seen the hidden story of Norwegian Crown Princess Martha.
Princess Martha, what do you like best about America?
My husband.
Princess Martha, a Swedish royal who married into the Norwegian royal family, was a major influence on the World War II strategy of both her husband, Crown Prince Olav, and that of U.S. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Norway?
Or Denmark? Or both?
But those countries are neutral.
Explain that to Hitler.
Can he really afford to establish another front?
He can't afford not to. Whoever controls Norway controls the steel, and the Germans need a hell of a lot of it.
When could this happen?
Anytime. Soon.
Atlantic Crossing tells the very real story of Princess Martha and FDR, and Norwegian filmmaker Alexander Eich helped craft the elegant story set to unfold these next 8 episodes on Masterpiece. Eich joins us to discuss historical research, the vagaries of memory, and the forgotten legacies of the Second World War. This week, we are joined by Atlantic Crossing writer and director Alexander Eich. Welcome.
Thank you, Jason.
The story of Crown Princess Martha during World War II isn't one that many people know about. Where did the initial idea for Atlantic Crossing come from, and how did you hear about Martha and FDR?
Well, it all started back in 2011. I read an article in a Norwegian newspaper that was speculating around the supposedly romantic relationship between Crown Princess Martha and President Roosevelt during World War II. And I never heard anything about this. I hardly knew anything about Crown Princess Martha at all. And I felt, reading the article, it felt almost too incredible to be true. So just out of curiosity, I started digging for more information, and this fascinating story surfaced from the research. And the scope of it was, it went far beyond my wildest expectations.
You used the word digging. What was your immediate reaction to the story that you had unearthed? Did you feel in some way like an archaeologist who was digging, as you say, digging up this heretofore buried story?
It was very exciting. It was kind of a detective's work. I was lucky to have my co-writer, Linda May Callestein, with me quite early on in the process, already from 2012. And she had lots of experience from doing research with her background from museums and archives and as a cultural historian. So she had the methodics of research. Research was something new to me because this is my first historical or based on true events project. So it was quite exciting, but it was also quite at times frustrating because Martha, she was a shy person and she didn't thrive in the spotlight. And she preferred to have a, you know, more a withdrawn role in the royal family at the time. So there wasn't really a lot of sources to be found regarding Martha. Lots of books have been written about her husband, the Crown Prince, later King Olaf. But Martha, she was more obscure. She was more hidden in his shadow, so to speak.
It's so embarrassing. Get it.
It's wonderful. My husband. Oh, I wish my missus would say the same thing.
Well, keep on wishing.
What you're talking about is an immense amount of research. 6 to 7 years is a huge amount of time to look into something. On the subject of research, did you speak to people who had contact with Martha or were alive at the time of the invasion of Norway? What were the sort of prongs of attack in looking at something this sort of secretive almost?
Yeah, well, of course, we have been working against time all the time because, you know, we were seeing that a lot of our first-hand sources were, you know, passing away. As we went along. So we felt that we were in a hurry to try to trace these people and try to find them and get to talk to them. But we did speak to many firsthand sources, especially here in Norway, survivors and relatives of people who were close to the events. And we also spoke with two of FDR and Eleanor Roosevelt's grandchildren. And they had vivid memories of playing with the Norwegian royal children when they were kids. And they could confirm that the two families spent a lot of time together during the Second World War. So, but also we have, of course, we have a lot of primary resources, which are including both public and private archives, private diaries, autobiographies, Norwegian, Swedish newspapers, governmental administrative protocols, radio speeches, interviews. I mean, lots of sources, both first or primary sources and secondary sources. So I guess the main challenge was to get to know Martha because she was such an obscure and very private person. And the few books that had been written about Martha were always very... the authors didn't really know her personally, and she's always described at a distance and very cordially and very respectfully, and you don't really get a sense of who she really was as a person. So I guess that was our main challenge in writing the stories, that how can we come, as writers, come close enough to Martha that we can start seeing her as a person, in as a character in, you know, in flesh and blood.
I mean, I think to me that's one of the strengths of Atlantic Crossing is that we do get this very intimate portrait of this woman. And there are a great deal of smaller intimate moments within this larger portrait of a war-torn era. For want of a better term, do you view the series as a sort of Romana Clay involving Martha? A look through the keyhole at these more intimate drawing room moments against the backdrop of something like World War II?
Yes, I think if you watch the first scene in the first episode, we set up this dichotomy between Martha as a private person and her official persona when we first introduced her and her husband, Olav, in a train compartment, and we see them making love. And then the next moment they arrive in Poughkeepsie, and they have to rush to get dressed. And, you know, a couple of minutes later, they step out on the platform and wave to the crowds. And they are, you know, composed and, you know, playing their parts as royals. So, yes, that was my intention to try and get behind the facade and try to get as close as possible to these characters who are, of course, iconic characters. Especially here in Norway, the royals are iconic, but also when we get to know President Roosevelt and Eleanor Roosevelt, it was important to me that we really try to get behind the facade, behind the scene, and get to know them.
There's definitely a delicate line to walk when you're dramatizing historical events involving real-life people. What were the challenges in terms of sitting down to write the story and remaining true to Martha's story while allowing yourself dramatic license?
Yeah, writing fictional drama inspired by true events is always a delicate balancing act between staying true to history and at the same time creating a compelling dramatization. And not least, remaining respectful to the subjects, many of whom are still alive today. I mean, Harold in this story is 3 years old, but today he's our king and he's 83 years old. So that was something that we really had to bear in mind while writing this story, that not just because he's the king and he's royal, but as, you know, a person, we have to treat this very respectfully. So I think the main challenge was to imagine what went on behind closed doors, because we know very little about that. Yeah, I guess that was the main challenge. And that's also the main reason why it took such a long time for us to research this project, because we had to approach the writing process as detectives. We had to sort of find all the pieces in this big puzzle and try to find as many as possible and laying it out. And then, you know, looking at, okay, so where are our missing pieces? And that's mostly those situations where we see the characters behind closed doors. That's where we as storytellers need to start our work, which is trying to imagine what happened and to do so in a way that is hopefully as probable and plausible as possible.
There was a bit of a dramatic reaction among some historians when this first aired in Norway. What did you make at the time of some of the more vociferous claims about historical accuracy?
Well, first of all, I think there will always be a debate on historical accuracy when launching a historical drama. So it was kind of business as usual. I mean, if you look at what happened with The Crown in the UK, there are many similarities to the debate in Norway as well. And I think the closer you get in time with the events that you portray, the heftier the debate. Because of course, there are many people who feel they have special knowledge about these people and these events. And historians are often very concerned about the details, and some can be quick to judge, I think. So there will always be a conflict between historians and storytellers when it comes to historical dramas.
Sophia Helin and Kyle MacLachlan are phenomenal here as Martha and FDR. What did they bring to the material, and what was it like directing them in scenes together?
Well, I mean, both are such wonderful actors. To start with Sophia, she was my first choice. I'm a big fan of The Bridge, although the character that Sophia plays in The Bridge, which is Saga Noren, is probably the diametrical opposite of Crown Princess Martha. But watching an interview with Sophia, I was struck by her charisma and personal warmth. This is many years ago. And I just saw that, you know, many of her personal traits really resonated with the personality of Crown Princess Martha. And she had many of the core human qualities that I was looking for in an actress. So I was thrilled when she accepted the part a full year before shooting started. So she started doing her own research very early on, and she even learned to speak Norwegian, she being Swedish. And I was very impressed by her stamina, I must say, and her ability to switch between Swedish and Norwegian and English. I think she's a true character actress. And as for the actor who would play Roosevelt, I really had no clue whom to approach. But luckily, we had U.S. casting agent Avi Kaufman, she came on board also quite early, and she told me that we should trust the quality of the script and aim high. So we approached Kyle MacLachlan, although I did have my doubts about the chances of getting him on board, because an actor of his caliber in a Norwegian production, I mean, this doesn't happen too often, to put it that way. But to my surprise, he actually accepted the role. And of course, I was very excited by that. But then the negotiation process with his agents dragged out. And I became increasingly concerned that Kyle wouldn't have enough time to prepare for his role. So when we eventually got the final yes from his agents, Kyle finally came to Prague where we were shooting, and we were already in pre-production. And I was quite relieved and again surprised that he came as prepared as I could ever hope for. And during our first dinner together, Kyle told me that he, of course, had been preparing for the part almost since he first got the offer. So I was very glad to hear that. Of course, it could have spared me all the worries, but we hit the ground running, and it was just such a pleasure to work with this distinguished actor and seeing him shape the character of Franklin D. Roosevelt. And of course, Kyle MacLachlan, you know, privately, he's such a gentleman, he's such a nice human being. So it was really a pleasure, yeah, on all levels.
Before this next question, a brief word from our sponsors. Ocean voyages, expeditions, river journeys. Viking is dedicated to bringing travelers closer to the destination, offering a small ship experience and a shore excursion in every port. Learn more at viking.com. Coming up next on Masterpiece on PBS, Mr. Bates versus the Post Office continues Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, followed by the finale of Alice and Jack at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. We begin the series with Martha loading her camera with film to take a picture of Prince Olaf. Without spoiling anything, how important is this image, and was there a deliberate effort to bookend this image within the series, Martha capturing another moment in time on film?
I mean, this is where we, you know, this is what she does both the first time we see her and the last time we see her in the series. I think to me it was important to show this, not just because it is true that she was a keen photographer, but because very often, I mean, the whole idea with Atlantic Crossing was, well, to tell a story from World War II with a female perspective. And very often, as we all know, female characters are the objects of desire, the objects of a man's gaze, if you can say that in English, I don't know. So seeing her with a camera puts her, you know, on the other side of the lens as an observer, and seeing her photographing Olav in 1939 on their tour in America. This is the day when they meet President Roosevelt for the first time, and then tying it up at the end of the series when he's back and they're, you know, at the beginning of a new leg of the journey, which is trying to find together again after 5 years of separation. I just feel it's, in a visual way, it ties up her arc, so to speak, throughout the story that span 5 years.
Martha is Swedish, not Norwegian. She's a princess who never becomes a queen. She's a refugee in a country that's not her own. Is she always marked by what she's not? Is this ultimately the story of a woman finding agency and declaring, this is what I am?
That it is. Seeing her evolve throughout the story. When we first start off, she is in, this is before the war, She's the Crown Princess of Norway. The only expectations towards her as a Crown Princess is that she will give birth to an heir and that she will raise him. She has already done that. She had two daughters, and then she had Harald, who is now the King of Norway. So she had fulfilled the expectations. She had kind of done her job. Now, that was all that was expected of her. She was a mother of three. She was, her duties, you know, in her daily life was to manage their estate and all the employees. And it was actually a farm outside Oslo. So they had farmland, they had horses, they had cattle and so forth. And that was her job. And she didn't see herself as political really at all. But then the war breaks out and suddenly Norway is like overnight, literally overnight, occupied by the Nazis. And they have to escape. And first she escapes to safety to her homeland, Sweden, while her husband and the king, they continue fleeing northwards in Norway because they didn't want to leave the country. But she's safe at least for a while in Sweden, but she's exiled. And this is where her journey really begins, because she starts out as this icon of the old world. And when she comes to America, she realizes that, you know, through her very intimate relationship with the American president, the only person that could actually save her country and save the Allies and save the world, she could actually influence him. And this is where her political awakening begins, when she realizes that she has that influence, and when the Norwegian authorities understands her position, and they actually officially orders her or asks her to use her influence to speak on behalf of Norway and to try to get some kind of support from America. And suddenly, you know, she has this political role, and to her, it's, I actually see the story as a coming of age story, although she is already in her 40s when the story begins. But she's really, it's a story of emancipation and of awakening. And we see a main character that really has to change her whole mindset and change her whole, the idea of who she is really from the beginning of the story till the end. And when she returns after the war, she's definitely a changed person.
As the Crown Princess is a rather private and elusive figure, what is your take on who she was as both a character in Atlantic Crossing and as an individual?
I did speak to people who knew her, and amongst them was an adjutant who worked for the royal family for several years before Crown Princess Martha died. And of all the firsthand witnesses we have spoken with, I mean, all of them describe her as very empathetic. She had a warmth to her character. She could appear quite shy, but on a one-on-one situation, she would be always genuinely interested in the person she had a conversation with, regardless of this person's status. If it was, you know, a factory worker or a royal, it didn't matter to her. She was genuinely interested in other human beings. And she was very popular as a crown prince with the Norwegian people. She was originally Swedish, but she came to Norway after marrying the Norwegian crown prince. And I think she was very intelligent, but in a very, she would use her intelligence in subtle ways. And this is something I think she used to her and her country's benefit when she had this very close relationship with the American president, that she would, you know, during their conversations, she would make sure to launch, you know, some topics or some concerns that she had in a way that seem very organic to the discussion. And, you know, she would very often get something from Roosevelt without him even noticing that she had asked. So, yeah, she was a great agent for Norwegian authorities in Washington, I think, in that sense.
Have you received any reports from the American intelligence? I mean, regarding a threat of a German invasion. Olaf fears it could happen, but our government seems to be more concerned about a British invasion.
Oh, believe me, Your Highness. No one hopes more than I that Norway is spared from this war.
Please, if there is anything you know, anything.
Well, in times of war, steel is more precious than gold, so as long as most of Germany's iron has to pass through Norway, yes, there's a risk of invasion.
Please, Madam Ambassador, is it imminent?
Prepare for the worst.
What do you believe would have happened to the Norwegian royal family had they stayed after the invasion rather than tried to flee? How much danger were they in?
I guess what would have happened is what happened in Belgium when King Leopold, you know, he chose to stay. And in Denmark, the king chose to stay. They would become prisoners in their own castles. I think as for the Norwegian royal family, I think they would probably experience even more difficulties because they had been very outspoken about their anti-Nazi attitudes before the war. And I think for King Haakon, it was really no option. He was very clear about his stance against the Nazis, and he would never accept, never compromise with the occupation force in Norway. So to him, it was a matter of staying true to his promise when he became king. Because what is very special about King Haakon is that he's probably one of the few democratically elected kings ever, probably, because after Norway gained its independence after the union with Sweden, we suddenly didn't have our own king. And then, you know, we had a public vote if we were going to have a king or not. And the people wanted a king. And we hadn't had a Norwegian king for like 400 years. So then they looked first to Sweden and they asked Prince Carl in Sweden, who is actually Crown Princess Martha's father. And he declined. He didn't want to become king of Norway. Wisely so, I would say. And then they went to Denmark and they asked the Danish Prince Carl if he would like to be the king of Norway. And he accepted and took the name Haakon when he came in 1905, when Olav was still, you know, a very small child. So King Haakon, he wanted to stay true to the constitution. So for him, it was really no option when Norway was occupied. He was very clear on that, you know, it was for him a matter of he wouldn't surrender, really.
In the most tense scene of this first episode, Martha's motorcade is stopped on the Swedish border. Despite her being the niece of the King of Sweden and the Crown Princess of Norway, we stop for no one, she says, echoing Olav's words. How significant of a moment is this for Martha? Is this the sort of first glimmer of steel in her soul that we're seeing?
Absolutely, and I think that's a good observation again. This is the first scene where we see her proactively, you know, taking such a... It's actually a life and death decision because the Swedish border patrols were armed and they were instructed not to let anyone cross the border. And this scene is actually a very detailed reenactment of the first-hand witnesses, amongst them Princess Astrid, who has very vividly described this happening at the Swedish border. So we've just taken that story and actually just done it exactly as she told it, and also other first-hand witnesses. One of the drivers who also described the scene very coherent with Astrid's description. So seeing Martha saying, you know, we'll stop for no one, and they just drive towards the gates, and they're actually risking their lives in doing so. But to her, it was, they were really, really afraid. They had heard several rumors or reports that the Germans were after them, and which they also, you know, they were after them. They tried to kill the king on several occasions, and they nearly succeeded in doing so. So for her, it was a life and death matter, and she really had to get herself and the children, and of course Harold, who was the heir to the throne, you know, she had to get him to safety, and this was her only solution.
And it's a stunning one to have to make, but it does show her sort of strength of character and fortitude, and tease us about the woman she is going to become over the course of these next few episodes. What do you hope viewers ultimately take away from Atlantic Crossing or from learning about the Crown Princess?
I hope the wider audience will experience the series as an inspiring universal story of awakening. The characters are iconic, but I hope the viewers will see them like never before, to get to know them as human beings, which is, after all, the power of motion pictures. We can't get that from the history books. On another level, one can see how the pre-war era resonates with current events, how the US public in the early 1940s was advocating isolationism, and how the world was influenced by totalitarianism, with a growing public discontent, economic decline, political polarization, etc. All this makes Atlantic Crossing relevant, and sadly so, I would say. But it is a story, I think we have a lot to learn from this story. And I think the message is overall positive, that we should learn from our past, and we should see that this path is not a path we would like to go down once more. And that democracy and freedom are values that we shouldn't take for granted. It's so vulnerable, and we really have to fight for it. And we have to do everything we can to protect these core values to our Western democracies.
Alexander Ike, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Atlantic Crossing is the rare masterpiece title with a substantial portion of its story told via subtitles. A help for non-Norwegian viewers, of course, and maybe even a help for Swedish-born actor Sofia Hallen, who stars as Crown Princess Martha.
Listen, we've had word that the Germans might bomb this hotel.
They don't even know we're here.
They have spies everywhere. How do you think they found the king and your husband?
But this is Swedish territory.
Marta, until a few days ago, no one believed Norway or Denmark would be attacked.
You must leave.
Hallen speaks in Swedish, Norwegian, and English for her role on the series, but when she joins us here on the podcast April 11th, never fear, we'll be speaking in English. Masterpiece Studio is hosted by me, Jace Lacob, and produced by Nick Anderson. Elisheba Etoup is our editor. The executive producer of Masterpiece is Suzanne Simpson. Sponsors for Masterpiece on PBS are Viking Cruises, Raymond James, and the Masterpiece Trust.